everybody. This is Armand DeMello.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you here today to teach you a little bit about the human mind. You've heard a lot about the human mind recently, and everybody likes to explain it in their own way. Everybody likes to find cause and effect when it comes to how people are and how they think. Today, we want to talk about two very powerful effects on the human mind. One is we're going to talk about mind control, and the other is about possession syndrome. Yes, can a person be possessed? Can a person be possessed, or do people get possessed? Well, we're going to present some very interesting clinical data about that. But let's start off with, just to give you an example of the depth of the flexibility of the human mind and the depth of possession, let's talk about some of the intentional technique used by some people to control a mind. So let's say we had, I guess we could use this, a cult, huh, Roberta?
Mm-hmm, yes, a cult, a sect, a group of people who wants to control members, and they want to control members because of financial advantage or whatever.
Because they have a doctrine they believe in.
But usually there is a concrete reason behind that. That may be the surface identity, but then underneath there is usually a concrete requirement. There's usually a money or
money, sex, or power will always
right,
be good
exactly,
motives.
Right, exactly.
Maybe somebody just wants to be big in their own field, so they talk as if they're
power.
A superior, and they like power is a great motive.
Right.
But let's talk about the ways. I'm sorry, you were going.
Well, I was going to say that one of the more fascinating ways is known as love bombing. Of the new members, and that means?
These are a number of techniques that are used intentionally by any group who wants to take control of the mind of other individuals in the group. The techniques that you use, and you've seen them all the time. You see them everywhere. Now we're talking about cults. So imagine a cult, and it doesn't have to be a cult. It could be vegetarians. It could be people who believe you should only eat alligators. It could be any group of people who want to build themselves.
Well, and also who have a cause. They have a reason to gather. They have a reason to be with one another. There's a cause behind it, usually. So like you said, vegetarianism is usually one of the aspects, not usually, often, one of the aspects could be. But usually it's a political or a social cause or something that sounds good, something that sounds very right, very like a philanthropic endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the techniques, as I was saying, could be showering someone, a new member, with so much love, but physical love, hugging and kissing, touching, flattery, that the person feels like they have arrived in heaven.
I remember in the 70s, Rajneesh, when he had his farm, or in the 80s when Rajneesh had his farm in Oregon, and how everybody would just kind of go there. And if you wore orange, you joined a group of people, and there were arms out welcoming you, and everybody was loving you, and you were hugged and kissed all over the place. And sex, although it flew all over the place, nowadays in cults, it's much more restricted. You know, it's a more restricted idea, but affection is not.
Affection is not. And I'm going to say something now that, you know, many people are going to object to. But, I mean, even when you walk into an AA meeting or an NA meeting, you are expected to accept hugs from everyone because that's the way you become a member of that group, by letting everyone hug you. And now when you think about it, in that hug, there is a surrendering
mm-hmm.
of a part of yourself, because it's a boundary there that is being trespassed.
Well,
right?
It's an interesting thing when you talk about AA or NA. Because in those groups, what you're trying to do is possess a person's mind away from a place that they're possessed.
Exactly.
If they're possessed by an addiction of some sort, you're trying to get them unpossessed by repossessing them. And here are some of the techniques used by the most strange cults who might be malicious and by people who are trying to do something good. Mm-hmm. Love bombing is probably the most common. Person walks in, they get hugged, they get touched, they get flattered.
And they
flattery
also,
is a very important part of this.
And they also feel like they are in a family like a good family situation, a good family environment. So it gives them a feeling of belonging. Then we have something like rejection of old values. And that is where the new member is exposed to the denouncing of what everybody else is doing, of the traditional setup or the traditional belief system, traditional value system, and the new member is told, see, that's bad. What people do out there is bad, and this is the new way of doing things, and what we do here is good in comparison to the old value, to the old system.
The denunciation may come in the form of, you know, they are possessed by the devil. You know, as meaning that it wasn't an active role, or it could be that they are actually evil. You know, like if you're a vegetarian and you want to convince people that meat eaters are evil people, you know, because they eat meat and they destroy the planet, you just kind of all get into that hymn. I don't think, this is where I think the 12-step programs do not join in this group, because that's not what they do. They don't find the fault with the outside. They find the correction on the inside. But rejection of old values. You know, if you ever join a group where everybody loves you and then everybody gets together and talks bad about everybody else who's not part of the group, you're in one of the phases of mind control.
Mm-hmm. Confusing doctrine. That is when a member is encouraged to accept and or reject complicated argument, and in the end, what the new member is exposed to is confusing babble. But the mind of the person is then unable to make sense out of it, so it falls into a trust kind of. The person, the people around them, because they have no choice, because they can't figure out what is being said. So,
but
they
everybody, I'm sorry, Roberta. So it's kind of amazing, you know. You'll all get together and you will attend a group, and in this group there'll be somebody giving a lecture about the nature of spiritual algorithms, you know, and you listen, and as you're listening, you kind of, your mind is kind of bending, trying to get it, trying to understand it. Although I imagine a lot of people listen to me that way. But you're trying to get the idea, and you're working real hard, and then somewhere the rest of the people in the audience seem to get it.
Right.
So your mind is getting dismantled because you think you're getting it, but you're not getting it, but everybody else is getting it, therefore...
I better pretend that I'm getting it.
I'm going to make believe
you know
I'm getting it.
Who does that when people go to French movies and everybody else is saying, this is great, this is great, this is great, and the movie is very boring and everything, but because everyone else is saying, this is a great movie, you feel like you have to say, yes, it's great. You know French movies are known for that?
Jesus, Roberta. All right.
Okay, well, that was just something I was thinking of.
You just did it. My poor complex mind just thought, well, she must be right. Because other people feel this way, so I've dismantled my brain.
All right, well, at least as far as French movies go.
We're talking about mind control. We're talking about intentional ways of getting control of another human's brain.
Right.
All right, you may find yourself sliding into this every time you find, you may go to a volunteer, you may be a volunteer in an adoption clinic. How bad could that be? Or a volunteer at a place where children are foundlings. and you go into a place like that and the group is very welcoming, and then the group starts putting down people, and you could tell this kind of negativity towards the outside comes in, and then there's this complex doctrine about how Jesus or God left these babies at a doorstep, and all of a sudden your mind starts, even though you're doing something good, your mind starts losing its own power.
Mm.
Another way that we make sure that you don't keep your mind when this happens, and when I mean the leaders who intentionally are trying to get you to unthink yourself, what's the next step?
Well, another way that has been used a lot in religious cults is the use of confession, encouraging members to confess their sins and weaknesses. That, again, it's a surrendering of a personal boundary. So the person is made to feel more vulnerable because now they've confessed.
It's a share.
It's a sense of nakedness, I guess. And there's another one, disinhibition.
Well, let's go back to that first one for a moment. So confessing has become part of the style of, again, many of the treatment modules that have tried to get a person away from an addicted mind. Mind you now, there are people with good intention who are saying, we must get you away from that mind, and here's one of the things we're going to do is we're going to encourage confessions, and they do confessions without feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want you to get feedback on your confession. We don't want anybody saying to you, what's the big deal? We want you to feel the confession, and in feeling the confession, we take your mind a little bit
right
in our direction, which is why usually there's a removal of privacy. Now, in the more extreme groups, another thing that's done is the removal of privacy. If you're living with a cult, they don't give you any privacy. Your independent mind is no longer allowed to be there. And in fact, there's a time sense thing they do. What is that, Roberta?
If you don't allow people in the groups to have clocks or watches so that they lose the sense of connection with time, and they don't know how long they've been there, how long they've been crying, how long they've been dancing, how long someone has been speaking. That, again, creates another sense of reality distortion that facilitates then the taking over of the person's mind by someone else. In the confession, Armand, what I wanted to say was that, yes, when it's done in a group like AA, let's say, of course, the assumption is that the person's mind is going to be controlled by something, that the person's mind is no longer belongs completely to the individual. So the idea is let the group that has a good intention take over your mind so that you don't have to fight the addictive substance that has control over it by yourself. So as you said, that's a good intention, but this is the same technique that can be used with malicious intent.
You know, it's kind of interesting on the time sense deprivation. I'm thinking about one of the ways that you control the human mind is and I'm going to talk about casinos. If you go to a casino, they have no natural light. There are no windows usually. And there is no clocks. And they do that because there's kind of encouraging an addiction to form. You have a person who's got a potential addiction, a gambling addiction, and we want you to gamble. We want you to lose sense of time. We want you to lose your mind in the thrall of this wonderful betting community. We want you to lose your mind, your controls, what you think is right. We want you to go to the ATM machine. We want you to look later and say, well, how could I have gambled away my entire life savings? Because this is an encouragement of abandoning of your senses, which is further encouraged by disinhibition.
Well, disinhibition is when you encourage people to behave like children, childlike behavior, which probably causes a regression into a state of less boundaries, less control, less sense of self, and then people are easier to manipulate when they are in that state. So disinhibited behavior could be encouraged, meaning, you know, in a cult whereby everybody is supposed to take off their clothes and play in a sandbox.
And clap,
sing together.
Clapping hands is a big thing.
Right.
Children do a lot of that.
Right.
So you find a lot of applause, a lot of catching, clapping hands and singing together and rocking together and kind of this disinhibitory reduction of your mind to a childlike place where we can now use your childlike mind to become obedient. You see, now everybody sign your name.
Right.
Everybody sign your check.
Right.
Okay.
Another one is to expect people to wear similar clothing, to conform with the uniform look or style, so that they feel like everybody else in the group. And that is obviously different from the outside world. So like what you mentioned before, the Rajneesh culture, where everybody had to wear a certain outfit.
Orange,
well,
right.
That's another way. Verbal abuse. Now, this is something a little bit more, although, you know, I heard of a new style of, well, I don't know what to call it. They call it psychotherapy, Armand, but I'm not sure what I would call it. A new style whereby this is exactly what the therapist does. In front of a group of people, the therapist becomes very abusive, almost to the point of being violent.
Yeah, almost to the point where they ridicule you and they talk
they
to you. I've
heard
about it.
They humiliate you and they totally break down your sense of self, I guess. In favor of an annihilation, I guess, of your mental restrictions. I don't know. But the idea is to humiliate you in front of a group of people and then to take over your mind and to lead you on a journey whereby you then supposedly should be healed.
These are some of the techniques of Werner Erhard in the EST training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it was part of that. A lot of it, by the way.
I don't know because I've never...
Well, in the EST training, what you would do is you'd get somebody for a weekend and you'd pounce on them and say, why are you still living that foolish life? What are you doing here? Confront yourself, confront yourself. Meanwhile, you've got all the hugs and kisses going on all over the place.
Right.
And it becomes, you know, you have the community, abandon your mind. And then next is you've got to get somebody else to join the group. It was cultish, if anything was ever cultish. And even the outshoots of it, what the extensions of it have done, the very same thing.
And it works. It's still working.
Now, I would call that kind of therapy, not psychotherapy, but psychopath therapy.
I like that.
Run by a psychopath.
Chanting and singing, this is a powerful one.
It's
you get
so
people
nice.
To,
kumbaya,
to sing together.
You know?
Yeah,
kumbaya,
yeah.
And a little drumming,
we
maybe.
We shall overcome.
Yes, and you do a little of that, and you could really move into the mind when you have people chanting and singing and hugging
and again,
playing
I,
and, you know, doing
I really do want to say that these techniques are also really valid in creating community and in creating powerful bonding and good feelings.
But
so
you know,
the technique itself is not wrong.
I know, Roberta, but you know, what about that guy who was killed? Remember his quote? Don't you have that written down somewhere?
Yes, actually, it was a woman who said, if you find something that
is, wait,
sounds
let's talk
perfect,
about this. This woman was found dead.
Was found dead, murdered, yes.
Murdered.
Shortly after she...
Shortly before she got murdered.
Can I say her name on air?
Sure.
Jeannie Mills, ex-member of the Temple's... No, of the People's Temple. I guess that was a cult. And she was found murdered, and what she said was, if you meet the friendliest people you've ever met, and you find yourself in the most loving group of people you've ever encountered, and if you find the most loving leader you've ever seen, caring, compassionate, inspired, understanding, and if you learn that the cause the group is fighting for is the cause that you believe in, and you never dare to hope that anybody would care enough to do something about it. If it all sounds perfect, if it all sounds too good to be real, watch out, because it could just be a deceitful group of people that you are getting yourself enmeshed with. And indeed, she fell for that, but then I guess she decided, she changed her mind, and she was found murdered. This is an extreme case.
Armand Mill here with you, Roberta Atti. We're talking about mind control and the way that people control minds, and like we're saying, all of it should throw up a little idea. You know, there's this thing, idea about a financial commitment. You know, the idea is to make you financially dependent. You've got to give up your own finances so that you would become dependent on the group. Now, they do this in cults. You donate everything.
Tithing.
Yes. You donate everything. You give. No, well, tithing is only a percentage. In many cases, you give everything. And then not only do you give everything, but you become dependent on them for everything, including food and shelter. And you give all your money to them, and you send money to them.
Right.
That financial commitment is another thing. Now there's finger pointing.
Finger pointing.
What is finger pointing?
Finger pointing is when you create a sense of righteousness within the group by pointing constantly at the mistakes and faults or flaws of everyone else outside the group. Constant finger pointing.
And now they have these artificial hierarchies, which they build within the group. So then you get to be, first you become a member, and then you become
a special member,
an assistant leader, and then an assistant leader, and now a leader. And I'm telling you, friends, many of you know of organizations and groups who employ all of these things. Because I know of many nowadays, and I don't think they're well-intended. I think the goal is financial. They're just building a thing. Because this whole idea of having, now that you're good, I'm going to have you become a leader. You know, these were also, by the way, Werner Erhard originally found a lot of these techniques in Mein Kampf.
Of course.
Right?
Of course, yeah.
Mein Kampf,
I think that's where this comes from.
Was a doctrine of...
Mm-hmm.
Of how to get control of
and mind. Also within the Nazi group, there was a lot of exchange of love and affection.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, if you see pictures of young girls in the Nazi regime, they look like heavenly creatures, like angels. And, it's all within the group, it's all love and expression of perfection. Perfect world within the group. Everything else outside the group is wrong. Here's an interesting one, Armand. Change of diet.
I knew you were going to go there. It's
God
fascinating.
Almighty, have I ever seen this?
Have I ever been in this? You go to a place where they decide they're going to give you a new food regimen.
But first they starve you.
Right, and the food regimen is always starving.
Because it's less expensive to put people through a fast first. You don't have to feed them for 3 weeks. And then you tell them, see, I saved you.
I went to a place that was real popular in California. It was called We Care. And all they gave you was soupy water.
Uh-huh.
And soupy water was the entire thing. And they said free room and board. And I said, wait a minute. There is no food expense.
Well, Armand, since we're doing confessions here, I've been to places like that where you did not get anything to eat. You also had to clean up as part of your liberation from the toxic environment. You had to do all kinds of things in service of the people who were liberating you and were not feeding you. Now, deprivation of food is well-known technique to get someone to where you can get them to do anything you want because they're so hungry.
Well,
they
what
have
food?
No resistance.
What food would you really eliminate to destroy somebody's? It would be protein.
Well, no, actually fat. Because the brain is made mostly of fat, 60%. And if you don't eat enough fat, you start to lose it. Fat, B complex, eliminate the B complex, people will lose their mind like it's nothing, because the brain and the nervous system absolutely need the B complex. And then protein, there you have it.
And protein being any form of protein.
Any form of protein. In fact, a lot of groups, if you think about it, a lot of groups, you know, these dietary sects that would enroll people, and they really have something of a cult about them, they would all denounce protein. How many people I have worked with personally who are terrified of protein because they've been brainwashed that it's bad for them.
And fat, too.
And fat, right.
Terrified
those
of fat.
Those two, yes, terrified of fat. I've met people who have been on a no-fat diet.
Fatophobia.
For years, fatophobia. And Armand, their nervous system is literally burning up, being consumed from within because there's nothing to feed it. And they still don't get it because the brainwashing was so powerful on them by some of these dietary sects, which I'm not going to make names. But they are out there.
Well, this is Roberta Maria Atti we're talking to, who does help people recover from dietary disorders that are induced many times by some kind of belief in something, that some doctrine that was sold to you.
Yeah, just the other day.
That is completely unnatural.
I was talking to someone who was saying, I have a lot of health problems and I am curing myself by fasting. And I'm listening to her, and I'm thinking, God Almighty, when your body needs it the most, that's when you deprive it? That's what brainwashing does.
So fasting, so you're saying by removing the B complex,
B complex is the first one, yes.
And then by removing fats.
Oh. That's
you get the B complex in bread and in pasta, don't you?
But I mean, Armand.
Well, wait, answer my question.
Do you get the B complex in pasta? No. If you eat a lot of refined carbohydrates, that's when you go in a B deficiency.
But how do you feed your B?
B complex is mostly in animal food, like eggs, yogurt, you know, if you eat fish. Well, there is some in whole cereal. Whole grains, not refined grains. Refined, not so much. So grains, yes, they're high.
Well, would you say that the Italians are the least likely to be deficient in fat and protein?
The Mediterranean people, yes.
They eat a lot of protein, they eat a lot of B complex.
They eat a lot of fat because of all the olive oil, lots of olive oil, and good fats, good quality fats.
So it's not so easy to control an Italian.
It's almost impossible, except for the espresso.
Right.
That's where you can control
minds.
Well,
when we get into espresso, we're going to have to talk about many of the different possessions that take place. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. We've been talking about control of the brain through cults, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about possession. The possession syndrome, whether or not it is possible to possess someone, how people are possessed, what are the manifestations, is it real or is it not real? How can you tell? And there's enough evidence that the World Health Organization and the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association now include possession.
Possession,
as a distinct,
you mean by an evil spirit?
Possession syndrome, which is defined as controlled by an outside intelligence.
Isn't that what your specialty is, Armand?
Yeah.
With working with people with that kind of problem, dissociative and possession
we'll
disorder?
We'll talk about that when we get back. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. I didn't have any pizza today. And we'll be back with you in a couple of minutes.
You're tuned to Hi-Fi, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
Cat Radio Cafe.
Oh, yeah.
The Salon of the Arts.
Live Mondays at 2 p.m.
With me, Janet Coleman, and you,
David Dozer.
The Displaced Playwright, featuring interviews with scintillating authors.
And provocative artistes.
And why not a Poison Arts Minute?
Because that's why.
On Cat Radio Cafe.
Hey, cats.
Stop clawing the furniture.
Get down.
And head for the radio.
Cat Radio Cafe.
Mondays at 2.
Hey, the cats drink coffee?
If it's brewed with fish.
Yes. Tout est bleu. Amy Strong. Is it Amy Strong? Amy Strong, yes. A-M-E, which is because she's French. Mm-hmm. I'm Strong.
Tout est bleu.
Special treat tomorrow when you tune in, my friends. Not only do we continue with this, possibly on the possession syndrome, if I could get Ralph Allison to join us, which we'll talk about in a minute, but I want you to know that it, from 12 to 1 o'clock, you get a double dose because Roberta Mariotti will be on air.
Yes, tomorrow I'm going to be doing my own program from noon to 1 p.m., so I hope you guys can tune in.
Noon to 1 o'clock, see how these work together.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Armand DeMille and Roberta Mariotti with you on The Positive Mind. Now we want to talk about possession. You know, possession and the possession syndrome, and what is possession? Do you ever feel that you are possessed? And wouldn't you like to be possessed?
Hmm.
You know, I mean, people see love as a form of possession. Because wouldn't you like to just lose your mind in love or in sex? And you know, I mean, the people, there are many people who would just like to relinquish everything and just swim in the world of love.
I think, ultimately, it's the human desire to surrender to a bigger entity, isn't it, Armand? Doesn't that seem to be what every human in the end wants to?
Well, there's two ways of looking at it. One way is that we are all part of a bigger entity and we live with the illusion that we're separated by a skin-encapsulated ego and that we're all separated and that ideally at the end we go back to the consciousness that we're all part of the same big thing. That's one way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Another way to look at it is I am separate, but I don't want to be separate. I want to have somebody take care of me. I want to have a daddy. I want to have a big force take care of me. So I want to be taken care of by my big daddy. And in that way, I want to surrender my will so somebody will take care of me.
So possession really equates to a loss of self and a merging with some other intelligence, hopefully benign, greater, and something that will hold us dear. But unfortunately, for a lot of people, the experience of possession is not a pleasant one and is not something that they would like to have, or at least that's what they say.
Yes, so there's a willful possession where you give up your will to be possessed. You know, that's one. Or where you let yourself be possessed, and that could be in the chanting, for example, we were talking about, you know, before, where you join some kind of a group because you're lonely, and you're part of the group, and you want to give up your will, and you want to chant and play drums, and
well,
kumbaya, and om, and you do all of that, and it's kind of, you let it go, and you let your mind go, and you let whatever spirit force wants to enter and the smell of the incense and the sound of the bell kind of all go together. And
I guess that's when someone who's been, you know, in the throes of alcoholism for many years, that is what must seem like a miracle, to be able to surrender to a group that holds me safe so that I don't lose myself in the alcohol anymore. So in that sense, this is the positive aspect of possession. But what about when I'm possessed by a virus?
Well, okay, we're going to go there in a minute now. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. Possession. Possession, by definition, is the experience of being taken over by an outside intelligence, and we are not going to include the willful desire to be taken over by an outside intelligence. We're going to be talking about the unwillful ones. Maybe tomorrow we'll talk about the willful ones. It is the experience of being possessed. Whether or not it's accurate now, this is a phenomenological experience, meaning, I've always been curious about that word, it means you feel it, you know? I have phenomenological love, you know?
It means you experience it, right?
Yeah, it means I really feel it, the right. Phenomenological love.
Right.
Nobody ever says that. It's a good phrase.
You'd be the first one.
Anyway, the whole idea is that you experience being possessed. Now, how do you experience being possessed? Well, many of you feel that way. Did you ever wash your hands and you can't stop washing your hands? Did you ever, in every obsession or compulsion, sometimes you could feel that? And there are many other times, sometimes you feel like you're being evil and you don't know what's making you be evil. Or sometimes you're angry or sometimes vindictive and you don't know what's taken over you. Well, there's enough psychiatric material to indicate that there is such a thing as being possessed. Mm. And not just a psychological phenomena, but even on a physiological level. And let's start with a concept of the physiology of the human body and possession.
Well, possession syndrome involves a transformation of the person's identity so that there is at least a doubt as to, am I really myself or am I someone else in the experience of the possession? And the possession, for instance, with eating disorders, I often listen to people who describe their experience with bulimia, for instance, as a form of possession, or with binging, with starting to eat and not being able to stop, even though one's stomach is so full that it feels like it hurts, person can't stop eating, and the person says, it doesn't feel like it's me doing this. It feels like something else is taking over.
Cookie Monster.
Right. That's what I should tell them, I guess. So, you know, I was thinking, Armand, when we were talking a while ago about
the body.
The fact that there are 100 trillion cells in a body, in one human body, approximately, and each one of them, that's a lot of cells.
Say 100 trillion, I thought you said 10 trillion.
No, 100 trillion.
100 trillion cells, give or take three.
And get this, 3 pounds of bacteria lives in your body at any given time. Now, that is, you can't even say the number there because they're so small. So 3 pounds is gazillions of bacteria. Now, are they possessing you? You know what I mean? Anyway, well, when they grow too much, when you have an infection, you could possibly say you feel differently than when you're not experiencing an infection. So a bacteria could be possessing you. But anyway, let's go back to the 10 trillion cells. Every one of those cells...
Did you hear the latest George Bush joke?
No.
George Bush is being told that, you know, there was a little dispute and there were 10 Brazilian soldiers were killed. And he showed this tremendous remorse, and then he turned around and he said, how many is a Brazilian?
That's a good one. Thank you, Armand. Thank you. We needed that. So
virus.
No, I'm saying 10 trillion cells, okay? 100 trillion cells. Each and every one of them says, I belong to this person. The consciousness of this individual is my consciousness, so that's ownership, that's possession by myself. Let's say that a virus multiplies in my body, any kind of virus, a cold, herpes, anything.
Well, stick with a cold. And remember, we're talking about an intelligent entity has entered your body. And when you say viruses, and you could say, how intelligent is a virus?
Oh, it is very intelligent.
Very intelligent.
A virus is only intelligence, in fact. A virus has nothing else but intelligence, meaning that a virus simply communicates its own agenda to some part of your body, and then that part of your body is under control of that virus.
And that virus is going to replicate, and it's going to be spread.
Babies, yes. That virus is going to set up household in that part of your body, and now the structure of that part of your body is no longer under your control. It's no longer under your genetic control. That means the genes you've inherited from your parents and that make you who you are, but it's now under the control of that virus. So you could say a virus is only intelligence, and when it takes over, your body does what the virus says. Now, there is an immune system in the body, and the immune system is what you have that maintains your own self-integrity, and that's what you have to defend yourself. But the virus does really, is that a form of possession, Armand?
Well, it's kind of interesting because the virus itself possesses, and you know, if you've ever had a cold, and some of you have, you could feel it. You start with a few sniffles in your nose, and then suddenly you're dripping like crazy, and then all of a sudden it affects your eyes, and you're breathing, and eventually you're laying in bed with some kind of a flu, and you're taken over by an influenza or something like that. And, you know, when you're in the throes of a virus, a flu, or something like that, you feel possessed.
Yes.
And, in fact, so possessed that your spirit seems to leave your body. You don't have any spirit left. You're laying there and somebody says, how are you? And you say, oh, my node hurts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you don't have any will left.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a consciousness to it, consciousness to the fact that you are barely left, but there is a consciousness to the virus. Now, this is very important because this virus has won your body for the time being.
Same thing with a parasite, which can be a microscopic one like amoebas, or it can be, a bigger one. I'm not going to make names because I don't want to disgust people, but a parasite does the same thing, takes over an organ, a function, and then that you lose control of that organ and or function until you can regain it back. And of course, then you have the herbs and the nutrients that can assist you in the regaining it back. So a possession can be arthritis. It's a form of possession. Why? Because it's an inflammation. So it's a possession by a syndrome, by a series of symptoms that are not what you want for yourself. You don't want to experience that pain, and yet you have no control over the coming and going of it, even though you try.
And the key word here is inflammation. You are inflamed. You are possessed by a flame, and every bone and heat, every bone, every part of you, every joint begins to ache.
And it doesn't feel like you. You don't recognize yourself, even though you know you are yourself, but it's a different state of being. How about hormonal possession? People always say to me when they have PMS, they feel like they're someone else. Here comes the Dr. Jekyll in the female version and Mr. Hyde, because while the hormonal levels are out of balance, the brain can be hijacked by a chemistry that is so different from your own normal one that you don't know what's up and what's down anymore. And so,
add a full moon to that.
Right. And you're really in trouble. So, possession
by hormones also, mm-hmm. on the male side.
Yes.
A jolt of testosterone.
Yep.
And in adolescent young males, do you think an adolescent young male who is filled with testosterone is not possessed? All he cares about is sex. That's all he cares about. He makes believe he cares about other things. If he doesn't care about sex, it's almost an anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the way it's built in, and men could be so easily possessed by a sexual agenda because that's nature's design. Nature's
right.
design was to give you a sexual agenda so that you'll go out there and you'll have babies and procreate and spill your seed all over the place.
But it feels like you're not yourself because something else seems to have greater control over you.
And you think it's yourself, though. You see, it feels like it. You say, oh, how do I stop myself? You're in possession. Something comes along and it says, I'm available. And you say to yourself, oh, I shouldn't do that. That's my best friend's sister. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden...
I don't, because I haven't been a teenage boy.
There's no consciousness at all. It's like, I can't help it because it is my teenage...
Well, things like adrenaline can take control over
sure.
your body, or cortisol. Any strong hormonal imbalance or influence or excess or high level of hormones can feel like you're being possessed by something that is beyond your control and that you are powerless over. Now, what I
and,
have...
And you are possessed.
You are possessed. However, I think that, let's take a cold, for instance. Let's go back to the cold for a moment. When the virus takes over control, write those first symptoms. When you look at the chemistry of it, what you'll find is that when we come down with the cold, usually we had unusually low levels of norepinephrine in our system. The virus somehow mimics this neurotransmitter. Seems like it looks like that, so it camouflages itself into something that the body can recognize, and that gives the virus access into the nervous system and the body, in general, and then you are and then you experience the symptoms of the cold, but. Look at what happens to begin with. You're low on norepinephrine. So there is a loss of structure of yourself that occurs right before the takeover.
Well, you see, now you're getting right to what is eventually going to be our punchline. Every possession is usually the disintegration of an original self. That is a loss of structure of the original self that allows the stuff to get in.
Right.
You got to have room for it. And tomorrow, we're going to have to focus tomorrow on this. Tomorrow I'll bring you the psychological phenomena of your mind being possessed mm-hmm. and your will being possessed. But I think we're laying down good groundwork here, Roberta. And, let's talk about it. I want to ask you, Roberta, what about cancer? Is cancer a form of possession?
Isn't that fascinating? Because, in a way it is. You have a tissue that grows out of control on its own terms, and it feeds off of you, but it feeds only itself, and all it does is it reproduces and it eats. It doesn't really do much else. So that, let's say that the cancer occurs in the liver, for instance, then those cells no longer act like liver cells. They act they only eat and reproduce, so they go back to a more primitive state. So cancer could very well be seen as a form of possession, but when does it occur? It occurs after a loss of at least physiological structure, but my belief is also psychological structure to go with it, meaning that your immune system, the thing, the function, the organ that is supposed to keep you in the way that you are, to keep you yourself in your integrity, becomes confused, loses a beat.
You see, but how do you account for, Roberta, then, the people I have known who are the healthiest people, conscious, eat right, you do all the right stuff,
sure,
who get cancer?
Sure,
I account
for that.
You're saying, oh, they were compromised too because they were trying too hard?
Because in
too
my
hard?
View, like that, when a person tries to do it perfectly, they are sending a part of themselves away in exile. That's what I believe. And that part that is being exiled, the imperfect self, what I like to call the irredeemable, comes back knocking at the door in the form of cancer. And I don't mean to put this out as a judgment. I mean to put this out as my observation, as what I've observed.
And you've worked on an awful lot of people. How about pregnancy? As a form of possession. Boy, that baby does own you, doesn't it?
Oh, they certainly do. But see, that's the greatest thing that could ever happen to a woman. I mean, it feels really good to most women to be possessed by a baby that you love more than you love yourself.
Wow, how can that feel good?
It feels wonderful.
I mean, the vomiting and the all the stuff that goes through.
But there's something about it. I was just talking yesterday with a young woman who was saying she was sick every day of the pregnancy, and she was saying to me, Roberta, that was the best thing that could have happened to me. It's hard to believe, but that's a possession that feels right, I think, because it is in harmony with the goal of evolution. I don't know, Armand.
Okay, that could be one reason.
You know,
that you are meeting your biological imperative and you've done your job.
It's in harmony with the limbic system, with the instinctual self. It's in harmony with the self that's nonverbal, with the self that doesn't really care about all the politically correct stuff and all of that. It's in harmony with something that resonates in your heart as a human being. Those things feel good. Those are good possessions. Those are things, even if they hurt.
When you're pregnant, you have a feeling, there's a question, by the way. When you're pregnant, you have a feeling that there is something else in control of your body.
Absolutely.
That you're under the force of something else, and this force is not the baby, because the baby's consciousness is not what's controlling it, but the force of childbirth and childbearing.
Yes. And it really does feel like you surrender your body to it, because you have no choice. I mean, you just let everything go, and they're in control, whomever they are. The baby and the force are in control, but that feels right. And does it happen as a consequence of a loss of structure? Yes, I do think that falling in love is a loss of structure of the self. Would you agree, Armand, as a psychologist?
Could be. Could be. You know, one last thing that I'd like to cover.
No, I want to ask you a question.
I'm going to talk about love tomorrow. Mm. Oh, go ahead, ask me the question.
Well, the question I had was, what about those people that have that sudden enlightenment, and it's like a psychotic experience, and then after that, you know, like that guy, there's a guy recently, The
we
Power
only have
of
a
Now,
I wish
who
I could.
Had that experience.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Somebody falls off a bike and suddenly he wakes up and he's God.
Yes.
Yes, I know. I'm going to have to talk about that tomorrow when I talk about the dissociative disorders and the reactions that happen with that, which we will. And one more part about this, but the last part, you know, in the greatest possession I see, since people are living older, is dementia and senility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when a person is senile, and or when they have dementia, or both, and they get to a certain level of life, there's not even a semblance of the person I used to know there.
But you know what, Armand? When my grandmother, at the later stages of Alzheimer's, she was the happiest that she had ever been.
Yeah. So possession, but not so good for the other folks around.
No. You know? Only good for her.
Armand DeMille here with Roberta Maria Atti. We've got to be going. Roberta, you're...
Tomorrow, I'll be on noon to one.
Noon to one. Pay attention to that. And you could reach Roberta at...
Creative Health Solutions. www.cathcast.org.
And do send me some notes on this. You can get me through the website, thepositivemind.com. Back with you tomorrow at 1, my friends.
Oh, sugar time.
Degrees at 156. You are tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free, community radio WBAI, WBAI.org, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. Coming up next at 2 p.m., Light Show with yours truly, Michael G. Hoskins. Talk Back at 3 p.m. with Hugh Hamilton. First, an announcement or two.